in the U.S. Army who was also helpful to us. You know who he was, an American. Mm-hmm. I can't think of his name either. You're too bad Turner in here, he'd remember. But anyway, as I said, it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we did that, and we made a report. We came back to Washington, and we met with the State Department staff, made our report to them, verbally and also a written report. And that was the end of our activity, except when the Ramparts magazine said we'd, and I was the brunt of all this, because we got the CIA in there, mm-hmm. doing a lot of undercover stuff, and that personnel that I had recruited were all CIA agents.
That's what the article said.
Let me tell you what those people were. Being an MP officer, having been in the military, police, being a reserve officer, I had contacts with the general officer who was in charge of the special agency in the military police who'd conducted investigations of illicit, illegal activity. And I got in touch with him and said I needed four people, good investigators, who would be a part of this team. Most of them were people, 25 or 26 people from around this country where I went and recruited, were pretty much people who had been in uniform police service in this country, primarily. But we needed some people who were part of the team and who could deal with the investigative aspects of the whole job. And that's what we got, the people from CIA. Now, they may have been undercover, I don't know, but they were represented to us and to me as officers who were in the military police who had special assignments in investigation. And that's what they claimed that we had. So that's what happened, and that's how we got involved with the Vietnam Project, and of course, Ramparts Magazine. You probably have seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote that article.
Mm-hmm. That was in 1966, I think.
Yeah.
Our
state legislature conducted the investigation, mm-hmm. and we had to appear before the committee. Mm-hmm. And Hannah did, I did, Ralph Buckler mm-hmm. testified. Mm-hmm. And answered their questions.
How long were you in Vietnam?
The first time it was just 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Mm-hmm.
And then I returned because we had a staff of 26, 27 police people. I recruited from around the country, two people of the New York State Police, other from the West Coast. We had a traffic expert from Grand Rapids, Michigan, people from the Detroit Police Department. All of them in the uniform service.
Mm-hmm.
So, so we had quite a staff over there, and now I had to go over. We lost one man who fell off, a man out of the New York State Police. He fell off a barge. I don't know what happened, and all he had happened to fall. And falling, apparently ripped his leg open, got infected, and the infection killed him.
Mm.
So.
He fell into the river, or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's one of the things that happened. Did we lose anybody else over there? I don't recall. I don't think we did. But I used to go over about once every 12, 14 months, 16 months. Just to have people cry on my shoulder. Some people had culture shock.
Mm-hmm.
Live in this environment, the kind of people they were encountering. And I was ready to bring one fellow back, Vic Stricker, who was on our staff mm-hmm. here, taught here. Mm-hmm. Stricker went from here to Texas A&M and taught their program. But anyway, he got ill, was having a terrible time. And of course, I had families over there. Turner was over there. Mm-hmm. Turner did a super job. And he made a lot of contacts.
Did the South Vietnamese police, were there any of them trained on campus?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had, I couldn't tell you how many, but we had because of my interest, we had people from all over the world, really. We had Indonesians, Koreans, Vietnamese. We had British officers. We had German police here. And police from the Middle East. Turkey, I think, or I forgot. But several.
Were they integrated right into the regular courses, or were their courses taught separately for them?
They were taught separately. We developed the staff from throughout the campus. We had social scientists come in, sociologists mm-hmm. come in and talk about our culture so that these people would understand when they'd see a little kid smoking in an airport somewhere. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, this happened. How could this happen? You know, they take that kid and you beat him up and tell him to stop smoking. Well, we explained to them that you don't do that in this country. But and we always had a debriefing going on at the end of their assignment here. Mm-hmm. Spent about 2 weeks with these officers in the group and explain what they saw, because a lot of things they saw in this country they didn't understand. Mm-hmm. So we'd have, and we involved our psychologists, sociologists, people from those staffs to help explain what they experienced and how we acted in our culture.
How would you say President Hanna was in terms of his support for the projects that were in Vietnam and some of the others around the world? What was his?
I think excellent, really outstanding. Mm-hmm. He apparently believed in it, obviously, because he went to several of these countries, you know, over the years. I know on one occasion, Ralph Smuckler took him to the Far East, and they visited several facilities, Vietnam and others, that part of the world. And as far as I knew, Hanna was always very supportive. I'm not sure some of the deans were, but I don't know that.
Did you see any, in terms of financial benefits to the school, as a result of the Vietnam projects, in terms of federal contracts, or
no.
Did that there wasn't any
no.
major?
No. Nothing really, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other than individuals coming here from their own governments who sent them.
Mm-hmm. Were there any other? In, let's say, the early 60s, after we got out of the Vietnam project, or the project ended, were there any other similar things around the world that you were involved in?
No. I was involved here about 10, 12 years ago. I was a part of a team that was supposed to go into Russia. And there were about a dozen of us, I guess. We were to rendezvous in New York on a Friday night, spent Saturday being briefed, and I got a call from the group that was responsible for this development, and they were somewhere in one of the states in the far west. I've forgotten which state. It was some years ago. And on Friday night, prior to our departure, and I was all ready to go, I had papers and stuff I had with me, so was everybody else. The rendezvous in New York, spend a day being briefed about what we were expected to do in Russia. I think there were six or eight of us, I've forgotten. Friday night, the Russians called and canceled the whole thing.
Oh, no.
And then I got a request later, some years later, to go again, but I turned that down. I just had no desire to have that experience again. Mm-hmm. I think that group went. That's good. But that's the only one I know of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it would have been interesting, and I would have enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting perspective. Going back to campus and the school, the development of the School of Criminal Justice, when did it actually become a separate entity, or with a director? Were you the director at all from its earliest history, or?
Yeah, pretty much until I retired. Mm-hmm. And let's see, I was hoping they'd appoint Ralph the director, but mm-hmm. they had other ideas, I guess.
When did you leave as a director?
When did I leave? When I retired.
When you retired.
Well. Yeah. Well, I could have stayed out and taught, but I had other fish to fry. Mm-hmm. You know, I had the opportunity to go to take over the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia.
No.
I didn't know about that vacancy. They contacted me as a result of the work I've done with other federal agencies in the training area and wanted to know if I'd be interested. And at that time, I said, yeah, that was one of the reasons I didn't get involved in activities here. And there, I think, around 170 people that applied for that civil service. Mm-hmm. And they screened out all but 14. And the 14 of us met in Washington. They reduced that number to 6. We were interviewed by the Assistant Secretary of Treasury, who was in charge of that particular project. And then the a board of people met us at Glencoe, where 5 of us were interviewed by this board with the Assistant Secretary of Treasury, McDonald, from Chicago, a lawyer from Chicago who was Assistant Secretary, was chairman of the group, and there were 5 or 6 of those people. They interviewed us for the job. And there were one of our graduates, incidentally, beside myself, was in that group. And I ended up being offered the job. The last thing I told them when they got through, incidentally, that's something that I was critical of. We were allowed 30 minutes for the interview with 5 different people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
30 minutes. For a job like that?
Yeah. Just getting warmed up.
yeah. I couldn't believe it. But I had the one fellow on the who served the board was a timer. And when the half hour was up, he'd come in and say, time's up. So I left them saying, well, if you want leadership, I'll give it to you.
How long did you do that job?
About 7 years. Mm-hmm. And very interesting the way they operated. They had a guy from Texas who preceded me. I didn't know the first damn thing about training. But anyway, we upgraded the program, and the fellow that succeeded me is one of our graduates who had been in the federal service with LEAA, Law Enforcement Administration. And that program had been discontinued. Rinkovich, mm-hmm. Charlie Rinkovich was his name.
Who were some of those prominent graduates? You remember any of those that you had contact with, or that later went on to other things? You remember any of those that you maybe kept contact with, or?
I used to have a 3x card file with people, and kept that active, especially the fellows that were looking for new opportunities, mm-hmm. and didn't want it generally known, and I'd contact them. There's one fellow, I can't think of his name, I've been trying to think of it, who established a consulting service in law enforcement. He's out in the Far East, he's in Hong Kong, somewhere, and has established an office there and operates out of that office. And there was a fellow of the New York State Police, the one guy that survived, the other fellow died from that infection. Mm-hmm. I can't think of their names.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The
I apologize for that, but I should. But,
no, no, it's been a long time. And I'm asking to think about things they hadn't thought about for a long time, probably.
That's right, I haven't.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other people that you worked with.
Yeah.
And Ralph Turner, obviously I hadn't been able to interview him for this project, but what would you say was, would you talk a little bit more about his work as a professor and an investigator, and what was his area of specialty?
Well, it was forensic science and investigation. He taught those courses, and he came out of the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. He went to the University of California, Los Angeles, and got a master's degree. Ralph got an advanced degree. Ralph was a very interesting guy, and I have a great admiration for him. He came here, and I'm sure that people turned him down when he sought to get into the academic world, although we never discussed it. He had a very severe speech impediment.
Hmm.
Now, that's a big handicap for a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to correct it. Before he left here, or before he retired, and long before that, he had managed to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently in the early days, he'd come into my office, either smoke a cigar or cigarette. He had to keep his mouth open a little bit in order to speak adequately and accurately. But Ralph overcame that handicap, which was a severe one, when he came here. But I saw something in Ralph that I apparently know others did. He's an extremely loyal guy. He had a great knowledge of the